Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello. Getting ready for the fabric. Grab every chair. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Backyard. This is Margaret, your host, and you're listening to Backyard Labyrinth. Today is May 27th. It's a gorgeous day here in Atlanta, Georgia, home of The Backyard Labyrinth. I want to welcome all our callers and our fans, and I see that my co-host is on this evening, and I want to welcome her. So let me open up the mic. Good evening, Donna.
Good evening.
Welcome.
Well, thank you. It's nice to have been missed and everything. One of the perks, of course, being a senior that you don't realize. How many kids did you raise now? You raised how many kids? You have two sons. I know you lost a son, and then you have a daughter. So you raised three, and now they're all eagles that have flown the nest for the most part, and I still have one that's just going to first grade.
I know that. Just want to welcome you back, and I see
that
we have a caller from 631, and I'd just like you to raise your hands when you want to join the Labyrinth. We're just welcoming back Donna from a little respite. And having some fun with the kids. Donna, as you know, we've been discovering Jamaica one parish at a time.
One parish at a time. So,
right.
Yeah.
You know, we have 14 parishes.
Wow.
As I mentioned before to our listeners, that usually if you are born in one parish, you're very lucky if you know a lot. Well, in school you learn about the parishes, you know, but details about each parish is, unless you're a history buff, I don't think you sort of absorb everything about all the parishes. So I hope my listeners are having as much fun as I've been having, just discovering some neat things about the different parishes that we've covered so far. And we are on our sixth parish this week. And this week we're celebrating St. Andrew, which I must confess, I'm sure I learned about it in school, but I didn't realize it was a separate parish because, and I'll read about that later on, but I always just think it was a suburb of Kingston. For some reason, but I got it all wrong. It's one of the 14 parishes. So, Donna, that might be a little Greek to you, but, you know, foreigners think of Jamaica as such a small place, which it is.
But when you're
born and raised even in a small country, it seems big to you, especially in the days when I grew up, because, you know, we didn't have the big highways that I understand they have in Jamaica now. It took a long time to get from one side of the island to the next. And, you know, I'm sure the cars didn't go as fast and the roads weren't as good and all of that good stuff. So it seemed very large to me. And I think that most of our listeners also that grew up on the island in the, you know, the 40s and 50s didn't know or go to, very few of them went to several parishes for any length of time. Now you might pass through as you're traveling from one part of the country to another. But in terms of really, you know, getting into what went on and who's from and all of that, as I said, if you're a history buff, then perhaps. But I know that I was not a history buff in my school days. I seem to be very fascinated by the history of my country right now. But I can't remember being this excited about it when I was growing up. So, Donna, I hope that you will be able to enjoy as much as I'm enjoying all the different things that I'm discovering.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that's kind of interesting when you really think about it, Jamaicans will go all the way to Europe. They'll go all over, I mean, you know, everywhere, China, Alaska, all over everywhere. But it's really interesting how most Jamaicans didn't really care to, you know, or these kind of stay within their parishes and maybe ventured out or, you know, on your way somewhere, but really didn't, you know, it was like, I'm going to go and find something new or something.
No. You know, well, a lot of people are traveling a lot more now. You know, they're going to the North Coast and on the different vacation spots. But I remember, you know, my family was from Westmoreland, and that is close to Negril. And as far as the North Coast, that's the furthest I went when I was growing up. We would go to Negril to swim. But I'd never been to Montego Bay until after I left Jamaica and went back. And my plane stopped in Montego Bay. And then I eventually, you know, bought some property in Montego Bay and built a house. But I never visited Montego Bay as a youngster growing up, even though Montego Bay was not very far from Negril.
Okay, so now I'm going to tell you, first of all, my geography is very bad. So in relationship to St. Andrews, which is down here by Kingston, where is Negril? And
if you look to the, I would call it the left of the map and up, you would perhaps find Montego Bay. It's on the, that would be, Montego Bay is the capital of Manchester, I think. I'm not even quite sure. I have to wait till I'm doing that. But what we did is to do the you see where St. Andrew is and Kingston is below it on the map?
Right.
Did St. Thomas, Portland, St. Mary, and St. Anne. So we're doing that quadrant. You see how it completes that little peak. Does that make sense when you look at the map?
Oh, okay.
So I'm up at St. Andrew is below St. Anne and St. Mary, but between, it's sort of inland. We're not on the coastline there. Where Kingston is, you know, part of it is on the water. And so is St. Thomas and Portland, St. Mary and St. Anne.
You said it's underwater?
Syria.
You said it's underwater?
No. It's boat, you know, there's seashore along there.
Okay, I got you, yeah.
Got me? So we're in the interior now, where we can't go to the beach in St. Andrew. We would have to go to Kingston. Or to St. Thomas. You see what I'm trying to say?
Mm-hmm.
So it's where the that part of the island is sort of narrow.
Mm.
You notice it gets wider as you go in the interior. Anyway, I want to welcome our callers online. And if there's anyone listening on their computer, welcome. I see the little thing flashing, so I suppose they are. And I want to say that we're working on being able to interact with you if you want to do so. But I want to welcome caller from 631 and tell you whenever you want to join the Labrish, just press 1 on your keypad and we will plug you in. So, again, you're listening to Backyard Labrish. This is Donna, Margaret, your host. And Donna, you want to say hi to the listeners?
Oh, hi, listeners. Glad that you're here. Make sure that you visit the website, backyardlabrish.com. Leave a little footprint for us. Let us know you were there. Let us know if there's any comments or suggestions you have, backyardlabrish.com. And back to you, Ms. Margaret.
Hey, all right. So let's talk about St. Andrew, which the capital is Halfway Tree. And Donna, I'm sure some of our listeners can relate to this. Most times in the old days, we had a saying that we would say, they say, where were you born? And we say, under the clock. That would mean there's a big clock at Halfway Tree, and they would be sort of referring to that, even though they might be thinking Kingston, you know, because Jamaica, like a lot of other countries, most people who are born in the interior of the island are always drawn to Kingston. You know, like most people are drawn to New York, which would be considered a big capital, you know what I mean? Big city, in other words. So even people that were not necessarily born in Kingston would say they were born in Kingston, you know, just because it was cool. Got it? So,
yeah.
St. Andrew's capital is Halfway Tree. And it is situated, we would call that the southeastern part of Jamaica. And we're in the county of Surrey. You know, I understood from Lay or Loyal Listener that Jamaica was originally divided based on the English system because it's that way in England. It's Cornwall, Middlesex, and Surrey. That's where the counties, you know, just like you have counties here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Jamaica has three counties. Now, it's interesting to find that part of this is the sixth parish that we're discussing. But all of them are not in the same county. You're with me? But St. Andrew happens to be in the county of Surrey. And it is north of Kingston, and it stretches into the Blue Mountains, which is our highest elevation in Jamaica. You know, that's where the delicious coffee comes from.
Oh, yeah.
You've heard of the Blue Mountain coffee, you know, that is very high priced.
Now, so I assume that people live up in the Blue Mountains?
Well, actually, I don't think it's inhabited by a lot of people. There might be some homes out there. There are perhaps the owners of the coffee plantations or so. I'm not too familiar with that. But that is, you know, it's very high up. It's 200, it's the highest peak in Jamaica, the Blue Mountains, the highest mountain.
No.
So it's not, I wouldn't say it would be heavily populated, even if there are houses up there. I don't know the answer to that. However, St. Andrew, as a parish, has the highest population in Jamaica of all the parishes. There are more people living in that particular parish than any other parish.
Mm.
And it is also home to a lot of, you know, special places, like the governor's mansion is in that parish. And the Right Excellent George William Gordon, who is one of the seven national heroes in Jamaica, was born in that particular parish in 1865.
Mm.
And the parish itself was formed, he was born in 65, and the parish was formed in 67. And it was originally called Ligony. Now, I remember that name. That name is very familiar to me when I was growing up, you know, in the 40s and 50s. We would call it Ligony Plains. Actually, it lies in the Ligony Plains. And it was the first parish to be established by law in 1867. Before being established, it was known as Ligony, which I think it might have been called that a lot during my growing up days.
Now, you said something about Ligony Plains. Is this like a certain, is this just the name of an area, or is this like a certain valley or something?
No, it was the name of, it lies in, which it there's a section, I suppose, called Ligony Plains, which is part of St. Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
But before it was officially formed as a parish in 1867, that's what the whole area was called. This is referring to. But the interesting thing, and that is one of the reasons why a lot of people who live in that area don't, perhaps not even quite aware, it's not in their consciousness, that it is a separate parish, but it merged. First of all, let me just tell you how many borders it have. It is bordered by St. Catherine to the west, by St. Mary to the north, by Portland to the northeast, and in the east by St. Thomas. You see, so it's, if you look at the map, you can sort of see those other parishes sort of joining with it. So it has four, it's almost five different parishes that borders St. Andrew. But it was merged. It was merged to form Kingston and St. Andrew Corporation with a single elected council and a mayor. So in other words, that perhaps is the only parish that doesn't have its own mayor and city council. Every other parish has a mayor and a city council, except St. Andrew.
Oh, okay.
It is known as KSAC, which is Kingston and St. Andrew Corporation, or called the corporate area.
So now, question for you. The halfway tree, does that have any significance?
Only that it is the capital of St. Andrew. That's all so far. And it, of course, it's, there's a lot of business and things in that particular area.
It seems so Indian, you know, or Native American of a name, as opposed to some of the other names of the places that we've talked about.
Right. Well, besides Halfway Tree, which is the capital, on the other shows we discussed the towns that people would know the names of. So as far as St. Andrew is concerned, Crossroads is considered a city. New Kingston, Halfway Tree, which is the capital. Matilda's Corner, a lot of people knew that. And Constant Spring. So those would be the cities then within St. Andrew.
Oh, okay.
But as it says here, many are regarded as suburbs of Kingston. So it gets a little confusing because most people, including me, didn't realize it was a separate parish, only that it merged with Kingston to have politically, you know, one mayor, one city council. So decisions are usually made for the whole of that area, so two parishes in one. Now, this is interesting. You know, there are 2.6 million people on the island, supposedly, those that have been included in the census, because there are areas, I understand, where the census is not very accurate.
Mm.
However, and I'll just throw this in, which has nothing to do with St. Andrew. First of all, it has the most highest population because it has over 500,000 people living in St. Andrew, or in the core area, as it would be.
You're saying out of 2.1 million?
2.6.
2.6?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, wow.
540,715 people, and I don't know when that census was taken. But so you can see that most of the people reside actually in St. Andrew.
Well, I wonder what the housing is like. I mean, I know that this has happened probably over a period of time. So, I mean, are there more? I wonder if there, you know, I guess.
Well, I would say that there are more middle class and upper class, as we call them, housing in that area than in Kingston. You know, in Kingston, you will find now, right now, you know, in the old days it was different. But in the Kingston era, what would be considered the Kingston era, you will find poorer housing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
With 500,000 people, I mean, you must have a lot of apartments or something, or sky rises. I mean...
I wouldn't call it a lot. Well, I have not been to Kings, to that area in the last perhaps 15 years. I moved here. My mother passed away in 1984, and I think I went there in perhaps 86.
Mm.
86, yeah, and that might have been my last. No. I made a couple of other trips. No, I didn't. So I haven't been there in a long time, but I don't get the impression that there are lots of apartment houses. And if there are any listeners that can give us any information on that, please hit one on your keypad so we can just open up the mic to you, because this is Margaret, your host, and Donna is here with us this evening. And for our listeners who don't know, Donna is a fan of Jamaica but has never visited. So, of course, she's very curious and have a lot of questions. And Margaret left Jamaica so long ago, and especially Kingston and St. Andrew, that I am not too up to date with the current housing situation there. And most of this information that I am sharing, which a lot of it, I mean, was new to me, I got from Wikipedia and different websites through the Jamaican Gleaning Company, and I have some interesting information from Dr. Joy Lumsden's site, too, which I'll share later on. Now, it mentions here that a lot of the parish is given over to agriculture, which was news to me. Its principal products include coffee, mangoes, cocoa, peas, beans, sugarcane, cattle, dairy goods, cigar and cigarettes, vegetables, and ground provisions. We also have, it says here that the industrial estate is over 300 acres in size, and that was something that was put together by, I don't know if it's a recent government or so, but that is to encourage, I suppose, more of that, more agriculture in the area. That area, the 300 acres, was established as an industrial estate in St. Andrew, bordering on Western Kingston. This industrial estate is over 300 acres in size. Now, we have something called gypsum. And it's found in large quantities in eastern St. Andrew, the largest deposits being in the area of Bull Bay, a mile and a half of the coast. So I'm not sure what coast they're talking about, because when you say coast to me, it sounds like it should be the ocean. At the south of Papine, several miles northeast of Kingston, is the University of the West Indies, which, you know, has graduated many of brilliant graduates that are not only serving Jamaica, but they're serving all over the world. And, of course, as you said, Donna, we travel so much that I'm sure you'll find them being successful all over the globe. And there's also, as a matter of fact, there are two universities now are, I don't know if one is a branch of the other, but there was the College of Art, Science, and Technology has become the University of Technology now. Well, before we had one university, which is the, we call it UCWI, I think, which is the University of the West Indies. But now we have two. We have the University of the West Indies and the University of Technology. So here are some of the important buildings or structures in the parish of St. Andrew. The Governor General resides at King's House, and that is in St. Andrew. Royal Vale is the Prime Minister's residence. You know, we have a Governor General and we have a Prime Minister. The Governor General is appointed by the Queen, and the Prime Minister is voted in by the people. And Donna, that is a little history of vote or politics for you.
Well, now, who has more power, the Governor, the Governor General?
You know, that's a good question. I don't think so, you know, because they're a democratic country and they're governed by the people and the people select who governs them. I would think that the Governor General is like the Queen's representative because we still are connected to England in some way.
Kind of like an embassy person or?
No. I don't think it has anything to do with the embassy. And that here again, if any of our callers have some information on that, that can enlighten us. I would really appreciate it. But that's something that I'll perhaps research and tell you. As you know, I am not a student of the New Jamaica because I migrated when we were still a British colony. And perhaps that is why all of this research is so interesting to me. But that's what it says here. That, and I knew that before, you know, that the Governor General lives in King's House and the Prime Minister's residence is called Royal Vale, but they're both in the parish of St. Andrew. And now remember now that these people would be in charge of both Kingston and St. Andrew. And there's a big commercial complex there called New Kingston. The Bob Marley Museum is also in St. Andrew, and Sabina Park, which is a big sports arena, and the National Stadium, these are all in St. Andrew, and of course, Jamaica House. Now, just as a sidebar, you know, you know who Sean Paul is?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, he was born in St. Andrew. He was born in Kingston, actually, and grew up in St. Andrew.
Yeah, I saw a program that he had on television here, and he was talking about Jamaican food and how he has to go back to Jamaica to get some real Jamaican food. And I think he was doing something in New York or something, so it was pretty cool.
Right, right. But actually, because Kingston and St. Andrew is so close, you know, for instance, my birth certificate said that I was born in St. Andrew. And I always said I was born in Kingston. You know, and not that St. Andrew is the country, but I mean, I didn't know that it was two different places. I didn't make any difference to me. If anyone asked me where I'm from, I'd always say Kingston. But anyway, Sean's parents, it was very interesting. They were both athletes. His mother was a well-known painter. And his grandfather was a Jew from Portugal. I remember my cousin, Lay, who is he on tonight? I think he had a meeting or something tonight. But he did some research and found out that our grandfather was from Portugal, too. But anyway, it's interesting because he was raised Catholic, it said, and many members of his family were swimmers. His great-grandfather was the first Jamaican's men national water polo team. And I'm thinking, you know, quite likely my husband must have known him because he played water polo. And I'm sure if Lay was on, he would know perhaps of his father because, you know, he was a big swimming person, Lay was, when he was growing up in Jamaica. His father played water polo for the team in 1960 and competed in a long-distance swimming with, and his mother was a backstroke swimmer. And I'm thinking in my mind that I'm sure they used to hang out at Bournemouth Gardens because that was the big swim place in those days, you know? Because I think this Sean Paul, whoever he is, would be around my children's age. So his mother and father perhaps is in my age group. But I thought that was very interesting. They said Sean Paul played for the national water polo team from the age of 13 to 21. However, he gave up the sport in order to launch his music career. He attended Wilmers High School for Boys. I know Wilmers had a boys' school, where he was trained as a classical flutist. Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Anyway, then I have some that, you know, growing up as a child, one of my favorite things to do was to go to Hope Gardens, which was a grand, on a very grand scale, Donna, botanical gardens. But I realize now how I did not appreciate it as much. I know I was always in awe of it. However, you know, I had nothing to compare it to. You know, it was just this place that we would go, I think perhaps almost every other weekend, at least twice a month, because it was not very far, you know, from where we lived. And going there for a day, to me, was like just being in heaven. Mm-hmm. And now when I read about how it came about and all the things, the different kinds of plants and activities that it really had, I know why I was in awe because, as you know, I'm a nature lover. I just love being out in nature. That's why I live in the woods where I do, Donna. And I am in an area, for our listeners that might not be familiar with Atlanta, I see we have lots. The board is lighting up, and I want to welcome all our listeners to the Backyard Labrish. We're labrishing about St. Andrew, and now we've talked a little about it being part of the Kingston and St. Andrew Corporation, and now we're talking about some of the features. And I'm starting off with Hope Gardens because if any of my listeners can relate to what I'm saying, please hit one on your keypad.
Well, I'm sorry, was that somebody who's getting ready to speak?
No. Yes, I see. 631-451. I'm going to open the mic to you in a minute. So,
I kind of looked on inside the Hope Gardens. What was interesting to me was that we're talking about, it said that it was donated. The Hope Gardens was part of 2,000 acres of land. I mean, I was looking at it, I was like, this person owned 2,000 acres of land owned by Major Hope, and 200 acres of land was obtained by the government of Jamaica, and it was established to introduce, it was like a testing facility for crops, pineapple, cocoa, coffee, tobacco.
It was originally a plantation. It lived originally a plantation, but I didn't even know that it stretched originally, you know, not when I knew it, but it originally stretched to the ocean. It's interesting. But I see 631-451 has put up a hand, so I'd like to welcome you to the show. Who do we have?
Yes, good evening, Margaret and Donna. This is Janine.
Hi, Janine. Welcome to the backyard.
Thank you. I'm really calling. I'm representing late tonight. I spoke with you before when we were doing Kingston.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
But this is from Lay, you know, the Bronx, New York.
Yes, don't forget the home of the Yankees.
Yes, I have to quote that.
Yes, you'll be put on fire if you do not say it right.
Right.
Especially what they did in the last game I watched.
Right.
Okay.
Anyway, he shared with me, which I really didn't know myself, that Hope Gardens, since you were speaking about that, around by where they had the maze.
Mm-hmm.
There
my
was
favorite place.
A maze, yes. You know,
mm-hmm.
yes. There, they had a manga walk all the way from there right up to the university. You went up like a hill,
mm-hmm.
and that manga walk, I guess it had to do with agriculture or whatever.
Right.
It had a walk from behind that maze area all the way to the university, which is a good distance.
Right, right,
and
right.
All the good mangas you could find there. He said he was around 15.
Uh-huh.
And he would go there all the time, and you could eat all the mangas that you wanted to eat. And nobody would bother you. And you'd have, like, East Indian mangas, all the good ones.
Uh-huh, yes.
Dule, Bombay, you know, not the common mangas, but the real good ones.
Right, right.
It went all the way up the hill as far as the university.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I want to quote him right. He said, after a while, they took out a lot of the mango trees, and I think at that point, they started to build, like, houses and different things there.
Mm-hmm,
he
mm-hmm.
also wanted me to mention that in Constant Spring, near to Immaculate Conception High School, which incidentally was the school that I attended.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
They had the biggest golf course there.
Oh, yes.
And the only one in Kingston.
Right, right. And I think part of that is still there, or at least in 1970, I know it was.
Right.
The golf course.
Right.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Now, were you a regular visitor to Hope Gardens?
Oh, yes. That was something we did on the weekend, too.
Right, right, right,
yes.
right.
Yes.
And what do you remember most?
Well, the thing that I remember were really the plants, and somehow it was so relaxing. And of course, you try to go in the maze and to find your way out.
Right,
but
right. That was such a rush. That was
right.
So intriguing to
right,
do that.
Right. It was a little scary, but still there was some fun to it, you know.
Right, right. But one of the memories that I have is the military band playing in the gazebo.
Yes, I remember.
They were dressed up in their regalia with
yes.
their headdress.
Yes.
You remember how colorful it was?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they would play classical music.
Yes, yes.
Oh, my gosh. It was so heavenly.
Yes.
And you're in this beautiful garden with just flowers and fruits all around you. And it was so great. I mean, we would go there for the whole day.
Yes.
Oh, man.
That's
it was,
great.
I mean, I think of the stress and all of that people have now. We didn't have any stress in those days. That's why I think that I grew up really. My growing up days was in the best part of my life.
You
I mean, it was totally stress free.
You and I both, because
oh my gosh, I remember just the feeling, just doing this research, some of that feeling came back. It was like I was in heaven.
Yes. Yeah,
it was
true.
Absolutely out of sight.
That's true. It's like you look forward for the weekend.
Oh, yes, it was.
Gardens.
You know, and that was, Donna, we did not pay to go there, and anybody could go there. It was free. There was
yes.
no entrance fee. I mean, you just go and enjoy
yes.
all of this all day.
And not only that, when we were going, we had to dress up to go.
Oh, yes, we dressed. As a matter of fact, before the fire, I had pictures, you know. You remember when those wide skirts were wearing and you would sit and then spread them out around you, the skirt?
Thank you.
I had pictures of me as a teenager with, you know, sitting with my skirt all spread out around me and the beautiful background.
A lot of people would go there to take their pictures, sometimes even for weddings.
Weddings, yes, definitely.
So
I remember that.
Yes.
So we would see the people there, you know, dressed up for their wedding thing. But, Donna, it was absolutely heavenly. And the music, that band, I mean, was just very, very excellent players. And they would play Beethoven and Bach and, you know, all the classical things. And they would even play a classical version of a calypso.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
So we were exposed to all sorts of music.
Different type of stuff. That's
yes,
cool.
It was not just, I think a lot of times foreigners might think that we always had or danced or listened to, you know, a tempo kind of music or the calypso or the reggae. We didn't have reggae when we were growing up anyhow. It was a different kind of music.
Yes.
But we had all different kinds of music.
Yes.
And while I have you on the phone, and I know that you are from Kingston, do you remember that we had a Philharmonic orchestra?
A little bit, not much, no.
Oh, okay. Well, I remember that, I suppose, because as I said before, I'm a nature person. Plus, you know, I've always loved the arts.
Right.
I went to the museum a lot. I went to, you know, that's where I watched Charlie Chaplin movies and things like that. So, but we did have a film. I'm going to see if Dr. Lumsden has any research on that. It might not go back as far
it
as
sounds familiar, but
I know.
Don't remember much about it.
Right. Well, I know one of my girlfriends. Her dad was friends with the leader of the, you know, the conductor.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a sister who I'm going to ask if she remembers what his name was and remember that period. But anyhow, I just remember the band being so decked out in their uniforms. They had very colorful uniforms.
And where did they play?
In the gazebo. No, not the Philharmonic. I'm going back to Hope Gardens now.
Oh, yes.
But
they were
almost
well-dressed.
Every Sunday afternoon.
Yes, they were well dressed.
Uh huh. Yeah. It was wonderful. But I want to. Is there anything else you wanted to share with us?
I'm trying to remember if there he told me anything else. Which right.
Well,
now.
I just wanted to say while you're thinking about it that, you know, that's one of the things that's so missing from. You can go on the internet and you can find information, but it doesn't really speak to really what you all were talking about. It doesn't say anything really about any mazes or anything like that or orchestras, and so that's the reason why it's really important if, you know, you want people to, you know, have an appreciation for, especially if people are appreciating it more now, they should definitely have a sense of, you know, wanting to, you know, share that with each other and put that on the internet so that it will stay here and people can always go back and refer to it and get that information and that feeling that, you know, you all just shared there with everyone. So, again, just want to encourage everyone to go to backyardleverage.com and also to leave your comments and suggestions, but also to tune in every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and leverage.
All right. Thank you so much, Donna, for pointing that out. Sometimes I get so carried away with my information that I forgot to ask our listeners to do that. So thank you much. I want to read a little bit about what I got from the internet on Hope Gardens. It's now called the Royal Botanical Gardens. It was formerly part of a major Major Richard Hope estate, one of the English officers who helped capture Jamaica from the Spaniards in 1955. Hope was granted, that's his name, Hope was granted a huge parcel of land as a reward. At one time, Hope extended from the sea to the hills in Newcastle. In the 17th and 18th century, Hope was a sugar estate. One of the first, listen to this, I didn't know this, one of the first where water from the Hope River was used to turn estate mills.
Hmm.
The Hope Aqueduct, which can still be seen at Hope Gardens, Hope, Mona Heights, and Mona Road, was built for that purpose. In 1766, Richard Hope arranged for Kingston to be supplied with water from his estate. But after his death, his wife remarried a British duke and canceled the water concession. Isn't that something?
Yes. Yeah.
That is information I never knew. Did you know that?
No.
Kingston
lost a lot. I'm learning a lot, ma'am.
Yeah, Kingston lost its water supply. In the 1940s, the Duke's son sold the city of Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
234 acres of the estate, bordering on Hope River. Kingston water was eventually drawn from this land as part of a publicly owned system. So for a while there, Kingston was shut out because this woman married another man.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't that something?
Because Mona Heights is close to the university.
Mm-hmm.
That's an area where you would find a lot of doctors and, you know, professional people.
Right, right.
That area, because it was so close to the university. So, yeah.
Right. Well, you know, the university is fairly new, you know, compared to, I mean, I think it got started. Do you know what year the university got started?
No, that I don't know either.
I'll check on that for the next broadcast. But it says here, the 200 acres of Hope Estate land that eventually became Hope Gardens and is one of Jamaica's few public parks. I wonder if most people realize that. We don't really have a lot of public parks. In the late 1870s and early 1880s, it includes a palm avenue where sago, S-A-G-O, sago palms are among the oldest living trees. And we have them there. I mean, not just in Jamaica, on the planet. We have some trees that are the oldest living trees. And it talked about the Bougainvillea walk,
mm-hmm.
a maze, a forest, a lily pond, other attractions. This is the old time they're talking, you know, when it was originally given over
right.
as a park. It includes a zoo, a lake,
yes.
a fountain, military band concerts, and even a poet's corner. Now, that I don't remember. Do you remember the Poets' Corner?
No.
There's also what remains of a coconut park where Queen Elizabeth came, the second came to Jamaica in 1953,
mm-hmm.
the gardens were officially renamed the Royal Botanical Gardens.
Oh,
the gardens have been undergoing repairs since 1996. I am not sure if the repairs are complete, but I do have an interesting blog that I found that I'd like to share with the listeners. And again, listeners, you're listening to Backyard Labrish. This is Margaret, and we're talking about St. Andrew. And I see we have more callers from 631 and 718. And callers online. So for the callers on the phone, if you'd like to interact with us, just hit 1 on your keypad, and we'll be happy to open up the mic so that you can join the Labrish. But let me go on here, tell you about this blog. It was talking about, somebody wrote a question asking, how large, how big is Hope Gardens or the Royal Botanical Gardens? Must be an old timer because they refer to it as Hope Gardens, which we know, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know it. Although I must tell you, when the Queen came in 1953, I was 18. I had joined the army. I was then in the Royal Queen Alexander's Royal Army Nursing Corps, a very small corps of military women.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to be also involved with the Ivy Baxter Dancers at the time. And we did a dance performance for the Queen, you know, when she came, and I remember that clearly. But for some reason, I suppose I was so busy trying to do my dance stuff and be a military person at the same time. I don't remember the declaration that it was going to be changed from Hope Gardens to the Royal Botanical Gardens. Because when I saw the year here, I said, but I was there and I was involved. Why the hell did I remember that? But then again, you know, once you get to be a senior like me, something start to slip your mind. So let's go back to this blog now. The answer, the straight answer to this question, which is how large is Hope Gardens, was the question, is 200 acres of land. The Hope Gardens, which is it's fondly called, is the largest botanical gardens in the entire Caribbean. I don't know if any of our listeners knew that, but I know that I just used to appreciate it. I didn't know it was the largest one because In my days of growing up, we didn't know a lot that was going on in Trinidad.
What happened is that we took a lot for granted. It was there, and you know.
Mm-hmm. You're so right about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it talked about you will find a cactus garden, an orchid house, a greenhouse, a forest garden, an ornamental pond, a plant nursery, a lily pond. It still have a poet's corner, a bandstand, fountains, a zoo, a bougainvillea walk,
mm-hmm.
a shrub maze, sunken gardens, coconut museum, and a palm avenue of sago palms. Surprisingly, the list just does not end there.
Right.
Hope Estate, that is the original name of the Hope Gardens, and is derived from the name of its owner, the original owner, which I mentioned before. He was a commander in the British Army. It used to be a vast estate stretching from Blue Mountains to Newcastle, and it ran through up to the sea. So in the year 1881, the land was established. I suppose that's when it was granted to the Hope person, and Jamaica was then introduced to species of coffee, coconut, bananas. So that is what Leigh apparently was talking about. Everything was introduced there originally.
Right.
You know, it was like a plantation for the introduction of anything that was going to be grown on the island.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, yam, sweet potato, tobacco, pineapple, for the first time through this botanical garden only. It had to come there first.
Yeah, well, Jamaica is made up of everything and anything, so it's everything included, you know.
Right. And a lot of Jamaicans might not know that we have a lot of exotic species of umpteen plants. I mean, lots of different kinds of plants.
Yep.
And they were all, when they were brought in from anywhere else, they were all introduced through that particular botanical garden.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that, you know, before they were, when this is in the 18 whatever.
Right.
Before they got shipped or sent to any other place. I found that very interesting.
It actually originated from the botanical garden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like a clearinghouse then.
Oh, okay.
Or before it got to other plantations, I suppose, you know.
Okay.
I don't know if during those days, like the rest of the world is now, they're afraid of bringing one parasite or fungus from one place to the other. That's why we can't bring up our mangoes and whatever we want to bring when we want to bring it. You know what I mean?
Right.
We have to eat it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it says now, and this seemed to be a recent blog, because this person was answering the question, and it said it's still lush with foliage and colorful flowers, tropical trees, and many other species that you have never seen in your life. And it says, don't forget your digital camera with enough shooting space, as you will always feel that every second spent in this garden must be recorded.
Mm-hmm.
There are many interesting rare species you will encounter while traveling through the Hope Gardens. The bottle brush tree with long, do you remember that one?
No.
It looked like a bottle brush. The flowers are red, but it's very rare. They say it's a very rare tree, but apparently it's still alive and well there. We have a eucalyptus gum tree,
yes,
which is native to Australia, and it grows here with its elegant thick leaves. And we have a special kind of palm that have red branches, and the seed pods will certainly attract you. Just all sorts of different cannonball tree. There's a novel cannonball tree with bright orange flowers. It's called the Flame of the Forest. Are you familiar with that one?
I've heard of it. Yes.
Oh, okay. And they're just talking about the elephant tree from Africa.
Wow.
And we also have hundreds of edible fruits. Some are very common species include star apple. And Donna, we're talking about in this one garden.
Yeah.
We have star apple, ackee, guava, breadfruit, pimento, cashew, apples, lychees. Oh, I mean, Jimbalin. Do you remember Jimbalin?
Lychees, too.
Lychees, yeah. Do you remember Jimbalin?
Yes, I do.
Oh, it's a greenish. When it's ripe, it's still green.
No, Jimbalin is like a whitish looking color.
Oh, it is.
Yes.
Oh, I was thinking it was a green one. Oh, I was thinking of coolie plum, perhaps.
I think no, because it's such a long time. I could be wrong too.
What about coolie plum?
Oh, coolie plum, it's green. Yes, that one is green. And
well, that was the one I perhaps thinking of.
Yes.
Oh, and
but
isn't that
Jimbalin, I don't remember Jimbalin being green. No, I think it has more of a lighter color.
Oh, a light green?
No, light color, almost like maybe like a off-white color.
Oh,
I remember
it.
Right.
Mhm. All right.
I haven't been back in a long time too, so you know I'm thinking of these things as I'm speaking with you.
Right.
Yeah,
well, I understood.
You had red coat plum and you had yellow coat plum and you had coolie plum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember the coolie plum. I remember the red coat plum. I remember the yellow coat plum. But I don't remember what a Jimbalin looked like.
Yeah. The Jimbalin is not green. No. That much, I think I'm right on that one. We really need Lee tonight. He would know all these things.
Right, definitely. And again, our board is lighting up, and I'd like to welcome you all and thank you for tuning in to our Discover Jamaica One Parish at a Time. Tonight we're just talking about St. Andrew and our gorgeous and largest botanical garden of the Caribbean. I didn't know, you know, I always find something to boast about of my beautiful island of Jamaica. It brings back so much wonderful memories for me, because being a nature person, I remember as a youngster just having it was better than going anyplace else to me, just being in Hope Gardens for a day or an afternoon was like, I felt like I was in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
But I found a very interesting thing about a guide who is a volunteer, the oldest volunteer for public gardens in Jamaica. And I don't, Mr. Plummer, he's 84 years old. And last name is Plummer. And he has had 54 years of experience at Hope Gardens. And he's a guide. Now, I don't remember seeing a guide there, but, you know, I don't remember much. So perhaps Mr. Plummer was there in my day.
Yeah.
And I didn't perhaps notice him or thought I needed him because I was too busy trying to get out of the maze.
Right. Screaming.
I remember being lost in there a couple of times. And then, you know, people would always be coming in. And sometimes they'd get lost too.
Yes.
But someone in the group of young people would find a way out, you know, would eventually find a way out.
Yes.
But, Donna, have you ever been in a maze?
No, I haven't. I've never been in a maze. But now all this stuff that you were talking about, are you saying that all these plums and all these fruits and all this stuff were inside of the Hope Garden?
Oh, yes. But it's 200 acres, you know.
Did you get to eat them as well? You had to eat them while you were there?
Right. Uh-huh. You, as Leigh was saying, you know, they had like a mango walk. A mango walk would be a place where just mangoes are planted on both sides. And
wow.
A path for you to walk in this, you know, this group of trees then.
Right.
There would be a footpath or a road.
Mm.
Now, I remember my grandparents had some property in Hope. And I don't know if any of our listeners are familiar with ladyfinger mangoes. And it's similar to a East Indian, only that it's smaller and it's flatter.
Yes.
Are you familiar with it?
I've seen it, yes.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you are the first.
Small and thin.
Beg your pardon?
It's smaller to the East Indian and it's flat. It's like.
Exactly so.
Very small and it's very sweet.
Uh-huh. It's the sweetest mango I've ever tasted in my life.
Yes, I've had it.
It's funny that he talked about the mango walk. Because my grandparents had a mango walk, and I remember crossing over they had a bridge that go over the part of the river, the Hope River, and not a, you know, like a small, might be a you know, something that supply the river.
Right.
But we had like a wooden bridge over
yes.
it, and, yes. and when I crossed over that bridge, I'd be on Hope Road.
It's like putting a piece of flatboard from one.
Right. But, and I would be on Hope Road. And I remember that as a child, on this property, they had peacocks, guinea hens, you know, just all these exotic birds and animals, monkey, dog, you name it.
Yeah.
But what I remember most is walking through the mango walk, and it was all ladyfinger mangoes. So now I realize that it was planted. You know, those trees were planted. They just, you know, when I was older and when I moved back to Jamaica in 1970, people would plant a East Indian tree or a St. Julian tree or a Bombay tree, right?
Right.
And I think they grow quicker than even the common mango. And Donna, we have.
It's more a refined type of mango than the common mango.
Right. I thought, you know, I always tell people that we never had, that I was aware of, any distinct color prejudice in Jamaica. But we have always had class prejudice, like
yes.
the rest of the world.
Right.
But perhaps it might have been more marked there. However, I said to myself after I moved here, when I talked about the mango, I said, boy, we didn't have classes of mango because we had common mango and then special upper-class mango,
yes.
like the St. Julian and the East Indian and the Bombay.
There were certain homes that they would only plant a certain type of mango.
Right, you wouldn't plant a common mango. Well, I think, number one, if it was there before, you wouldn't cut it down.
No.
But I don't think you would plant it.
And that same mango that you're speaking about, the lady finger,
mm-hmm.
I think they also called it Sweetie Come Brush Me.
It's really? No, that's news to me.
Yeah, well, I am almost sure that it's the same manga because it's very small.
Uh-huh.
It's a smaller version.
And it's shaped just like
the
East Indian.
Not the same flavor, though, as the East
Indian. Oh, man. It was
very
mango.
Well, it was very sweet. Yes.
Well, you know, I just have a question. You know, when you really think about it, I mean, we get all kinds of fruits and vegetables from all over everywhere. Why would, when you think of all the fruits and vegetables that you have on your island that might even have medicinal purposes, but, I mean, all of the different fruits, I can't see why it isn't thought to be able to bring them into the United States and market them.
I think it might have something to do with whatever might be.
I mean, we get bananas from all over, we get seafood from other countries. I mean, we get all sorts of produce and vegetables and, you know,
but like
meat,
everything else, honey, it might be tied to the politics. Who knows?
You're right, because I was told, and I've seen it, because my daughter, she lives in Buffalo, and I have relatives that would visit us from Canada, and they can get our mangas there.
Mm.
So I guess they have a certain, I don't know why, but I think the mangas from Jamaica, they would ship it to Canada instead of here in the United States. So
hey, I'm just going to tell you what I think. I think it's a complete conspiracy to make sure Jamaica just stays tourist versus being able to export some great commodities that you all have there.
Well, it could be that, you know, we know that the agriculture is diminishing. You know, as I go through the parishes, I pick up what it's saying about what it used to be or what it is now. You know, there's less land. There's more housing going on in a lot of the places that used to have plant, you know, cultivation.
Right.
So that is happening a lot. And the younger people, if they're even from a family of farmers, most times the younger ones don't want to go into farming.
No.
You know, they want to go into something else.
Right. It's not like before.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And I suppose the same thing is happening all over the world because here, you know, in the dairy parts of the United States and where they used to raise animals and do certain kind of things, I think that the younger generation are not as involved in it as they used to be.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the same thing is happening, I suppose, in Jamaica. But as to why it's not allowed here, I don't know. I know that there are several companies now that are canning. You can get mangoes in the can and in the bottle and, you know, and even from other countries. But there's nothing like the taste of those Bombay mangoes. And those were originally brought in from other countries. They were not native to Jamaica, you know, Donna. I think Bombay was brought from India. And eventually I'm going to do some history on the fruits when they came and all of that. But it's interesting because I think even from the people, you know, in the diaspora, that thing would sell like hotcakes. I would pay $5 for a good Bombay.
Yes.
Honest to God.
And also,
yeah,
the
well,
Bombay,
you know, you
mango,
would think,
a lot of people,
yeah,
and they would serve it. They would serve it with a spoon. I mean,
oh, yes. We cut it in two, Donna. Separate the seed.
And
you put it in a dessert dish. You could make it cold, you know what I mean? And you eat it with a spoon. It is so delicious.
It is.
You know, the texture would be like a melon,
mm-hmm.
because that particular mango, the Bombay, is not stringy. It don't have any strings like the East Indian.
Like the, which one is with
the... Or the St. Julian. St. Julian don't have as much strings as the East Indian, anyhow.
No, there is a manga that I'm trying to remember. When you eat that, it's all over your...
That's Hiri mango.
Exactly.
Hiri mango, yes. That's a common mango.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some of the common mangoes are very sweet.
Good.
I love black mangoes.
Yes.
That man is not black. As a matter of fact, they're green. They're green when they're ripe, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And sometimes they get a little yellowish too.
Yeah, a little yellowish, but they can be green, but they're ripe, and they're black mangoes, and they're delicious.
Yes.
I like cherry mango too, the sweet one.
And with the black mango, it is so fine that, I mean, after washing it, you could actually eat the skin.
Eat the skin.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh, yeah. And there's another mango, the kidney mango zone, that mango I didn't particularly care for.
Yeah, and number 11.
I love number 11 if you get a sweet one.
Sour, yes.
Yeah. Did you, I wonder if any of our listeners know how we got it would be interesting to know how those trees got named. Don't you think?
Yes.
Number 11.
Uh-huh.
I mean, what does that mean? It's only Jamaican,
like
would you say, if you say, you know, have you ever tasted a number 11? They'd know what you're talking about.
Yes, yes.
Because, Donna, you wouldn't have a clue if I asked you that, would you?
No, but I tell you what, you two are definitely drooling all over the telephone.
I am, because honestly, as I'm talking to you, I can feel an increase in my saliva. It's so funny. And I suppose that is what is really, for the listeners who don't know, I am a senior.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, I haven't seen Donna since we all celebrated my birthday weekend, which was a hoot.
Well, I heard it was really good.
Yeah. I celebrated my 74th birthday, and I am just being so childish about all these neat things I'm discovering about my homeland. I'm like a kid in a candy shop.
Okay, Tina Turner.
Ah, all right. No, don't spread my business now. Anyway, to
hey, I think that if she puts some of those pictures on the website, quite a few people will go there.
Oh, no, I won't. No way. They'll say, this old lady is something else. Whatever she's eating, I got to get some. But I'm telling you, now we're going to talk about another interesting part of St. Andrew. We don't have a lot of time. But can anyone guess what that is? Well, Donna can't. She might, because she might have researched it. But this part fascinates me because one of Jamaica's most celebrated historical landmarks is Devon House. The Devon House Mansion is the architectural dream of Jamaica's first black millionaire, George Stabell. He was among three wealthy Jamaicans who constructed elaborate homes during the late 19th century at the corner of Trafalgar Road and Hope Road, which fittingly became known as the Millionaire's Corner. Now, Daniel Finzi, Finzi, was one of the millionaires. And Verley, V-E-R-L-E-Y, were the other families who resided in the area. These are all Jamaican millionaires. And we're talking about the 18-somethings, you know, Donna. Isn't that something? And these are black Jamaicans. Well, all mixed. But did you know that this particular man, his father was German?
No.
And his mother, apparently, was a housekeeper. You know, a lot of that went on in those days.
Mm-hmm.
With the masters of the house and the housekeepers, you know, getting together to produce children or a child. However, in a lot of cases, they were not disowned, or as is in his case, or, you know, disinherited in any way, because his father really recognized him and helped him out. So anyway, that is originally, that part of Trafalgar Road was known as Millionaire's Corner.
I have a question. He made his money as like a developer?
Well, I'm going to tell you about how he made his money in a minute.
Okay.
But I just wanted to, I'm just reading from the notes that I got on Devon House itself. because I found it very interesting. It says here, many would be surprised to learn, however, that the early history of Devon House dates back to the mid-17th century when Britain captured Jamaica from Spain. One of the central roles of the British government was to introduce religion to the people of Jamaica. And Reverend John Zellers was among five ministers selected for service in the island. On his arrival, he was appointed to serve the parish of St. Andrew. Now, the glebe is what it's called, G-L-E-B-E, as land attached to the Anglican church was termed. That's what they called in those days, land that was attached to a church. He was awarded, this reverend was awarded this property. And it tells you in a letter to given by Charles II, you know, he gave him 600 acres together with all the wood, trees, commodities, ways and passageways, and all the mines and minerals, whatever it ye, in ye premises. So that was the old English. So this Zella was awarded all of that. Now, Devon Penn was part of the 600 acres awarded to Zeller. Now, it fell to him, the same man, Zeller, and it's attached, it stretched from the site of St. Andrew Parish Church north to Sandy Gully, which we know Sandy Gully. That's where the gypsum is. Mm-hmm. And it's it encompassed Old Church Road and include the grounds of the present King's House. Now, to the south, it bordered Trafalgar Pen, now occupied by the British High Commission. Among the first undertakings by Zeller was the construction of a church on a piece of land bordered by Upper Waterloo Road and West King's House Road. Just before his death in 1700, Reverend Zeller was fortunate enough to be able to serve the parish from the current site of the St. Andrew Parish Church. Over 50 years later, the rectory was built on foundation now occupied by the Devon House Mansion. So, you know, it was reserved more or less for that kind of thing from in the 1700s. And then it went on to be occupied and owned by several people that were attached to the church. Now, Devon House Mansion. So, George Stabell was destined to lead an intriguing life. Born to a Jamaican housekeeper and a German Jew in 1820, George was subject to a range of criticisms and harsh treatment from his peers as a result of his mixed parentage. School was therefore not as fulfilling an experience as it should have been, and he quit the classroom at age 14 to become a carpenter's apprentice. George quickly developed a flair for carpentry, and by age 19, he played an integral role in the reconstruction of the famous Ferry Inn between Kingston and Spanish Town. In 1840, George's father gave him startup capital to purchase a ship, which he began using to transport cargo between North and South America. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, it sure is.
So shortly after, he purchased two additional ships to develop his new business venture in the West Indies, including Cuba, mm-hmm. where a revolution was in high gear. He realized that the island would be ideal to undertake a lucrative gun trading ring. while he did manage to make respectable profits from trading guns, he also fell in trouble with the law for his activities. In 1851, George's life took a turn for the better when he married longtime sweetheart Magdalene Baker, daughter of a Moravian missionary. Soon after, his son, Sigmore, named after his, George's father, was born. 2 years later, a girl, Teresa, joined the family. 5 years after their marriage, his ships were caught in a terrible storm, which destroyed the vessels. Unfortunately, Stabile was aboard one of the ships, which sank off the coast of Venezuela. He managed to survive the wreckage, and luckily he had the foresight to secure all his money, which was stored in a leather belt.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
Yes.
The belt's tenacity soon began to show results, because shortly after arriving in Venezuela, he became a peddler. And with his savings, he purchased a mule to assist in transporting his goods. His misfortune at sea quickly dulled when he began trading gold in Venezuela. So, Donna, you see how the lesson I learned here, you know, he got stranded in another country, but it didn't change his tenacity and his zeal and his goal. He invested in a gold mine with his friends, and 15 years later, in 1873, the business was showing huge profits.
Wow.
George Stabile had undoubtedly made an impressive stake in the gold mining business, and the accolade awarded to him as Jamaica's first black millionaire seemed very deserving and appropriate. His achievements were shattered, however, with the death of his son, and he returned home to Jamaica. Stabile's love for his country and sense of civic duty kicked in almost immediately after his return to Jamaica. It is reported that he purchased 99 properties. Now, it was illegal in those days to own 100 properties during that period. Now, I didn't know that, including 2 sugar estates. This is part of the 99 properties he bought.
Right.
2 sugar estates, a wharf at Church Street, a great salt pond, and a cattle pen in St. Anne. Isn't that something?
Yes.
So, Donna, that answered how he amassed his fortune.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't
yeah.
that something? I am just so intrigued.
Yeah, so much to learn.
Yeah. Oh, yes. He built a lavish home, which became the family's favorite getaway. That what he built that in, not Devon House, you know, in Minard, at Minard. It doesn't say what parish that was. And it became their vacation home. In 1881, he commissioned the services of a contractor. You know what the contractor's name was? Charles P. Lazarus. Don't we know that name? To build the magnificent Devon House mansion. The house boasted a library, a gaming room, a ballroom, sitting rooms, a sewing room, dining room, and bedrooms. The kitchen, now occupied by the brick oven, was located towards the back, away from the house. In addition to investing in property in Jamaica, Stabile was a philanthropist, assisting the poor and disadvantaged, as well as exhibiting continuous interest in the social economic state of the country. Several civic authorities and local groups invited Stabile to sit in on their boards, including the Jamaica Permanent Benefit Society and the Jamaica Cooperative Fruit Insurance Company, the Board of Education, and the Kingston and St. Andrew Union Poorhouse. I just find all of that very, very interesting. And, of course, he became the first black custos in Jamaica. Did you know that?
No.
I didn't either. And he became the custos of St. Andrew, you know, and this was in 18-something. It was during his tenure as custos that the General Exhibition of 1891 was staged in Kingston. The exhibition was sought to introduce tourism to the island. It required extensive financing, which the government was unable to undertake. Stabell was among a small group of entrepreneurs who loaned the government funds to stage the exhibition. In recognition of his service in the interest of the island, Her Majesty the Queen bestowed on Stabell the honor of Champion of the Most Distinguished Order, which is CMG. Over the next 10 years, George Stabell lived happily at Devonhouse with his wife, Magdalena, and surrounded by his grandchildren. The Stabells also did no impressive job or, no, just a minute. It was no surprise then that they employed a large staff, which reportedly included 4 gardeners, 2 housemaids, a butler, cook, laundress, grooms, and coachmen. Several quarters were located in the space now used as a property, as the property commercial complex. Sadness again befell Devonhouse when his wife died in October of 1892, and she was buried at the St. Andrew Parish Cemetery under a gray granite tombstone. I suppose it's still there, with a white marble crown wreath in white marble flowers. It is said that at the time Stabell imported enough gray marble from Scotland to bury his entire family. Oh, my God. Tragedy continued to mark the Stabell family. In 1895, his grandson Douglas died of typhoid. Only a week later, his son-in-law, Richard Hill Jackson, who served as mayor of Kingston, passed away. So it's interesting that I find it so interesting, especially in light of the seemingly lack of recognition on the path of the, you know, the younger generation of Jamaicans. When they deface and disrespect, you know, their own land, the homeland, instead of trying to celebrate the past that was, you know, a good thing.
Yes.
This, if you look at his picture, I think he perhaps has more of his grandmother's feature than his father's feature. I mean, there in Jamaica, I also read in in my research that from early as, you know, the 18-something, it was not against the law, but considered quite rude to refer to a person like a black person as anything other than a Jamaican. I didn't know that, but that's why we grew up not just thinking we're Jamaicans and not thinking that we're black or white or Indian or Chinese.
Right.
But it goes way back when, if they were describing, Dr. Joy Lumsden mentioned that in some of her research, that it's hard to tell if you don't have a picture who was black or who was white.
Right.
You know, when they talk of the past. Because here he is, he has a German father. They don't say who the grandmother was, who the mother was, except that she was a housekeeper. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So you would assume, because he is very dark, that quite likely she was perhaps the offspring of a slave. You know what I mean? So, okay, we don't have much time, but I just find that very intriguing. I just want to quickly say that Devonhouse is now in private hands. It's all of the property is not intact, but it's still a beautiful place to visit. They make the best ice cream. Did you know that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They have all flavors, Donna, all the flavors, the fruit flavors that we that you hear us talk about. They have that in the most delicious ice cream that you ever want to put in your mouth. So, again, I want to thank our listeners. We have 23 seconds. Donna, have I just monopolized the time so much? But there is just so much interesting history about each individual parish that, you know, even an hour and a half is not enough. But again, thanks to all our listeners for tuning in. And next week, I'm not sure what parish we'll be doing, but we'll put it in the promo, but it will be one of the adjoining ones. Donna, you have your map?
Oh,
Donna, are you...
I went to St. Andrews.
Oh, okay, I got you. Well, we'll be doing one of the adjoining parishes because I'm finished with this quadrant now, which is the south part of it, the island, that peak. So we'll be going along, and then we go into the interior like I did this time. So I want to thank you for representing Leigh. Are you still there?
I am here.
Yes. Well, thank you for tuning in, and I hope you'll come again next week and invite some more of your friends.
Yes.
And I have another caller from 631 and 718. I want to thank you for tuning in and all the other callers that are listening online or the other fans that are listening online, and hope you've enjoyed our labrish. And does any of my open mics have any parting words?
Yes, we just want to thank you for, you know, going through all this and to researching all this history and, you know, things of Jamaica, because with what's happening now, sometimes we tend to forget certain things, and it's so refreshing, and I think to really look back to see really what is there, it's really something else, and we should still be proud of our country.
All right. Amen. I say amen to that.
Yes.
Donna? Are you still there, Donna? I guess Donna must have taken a break. Well, I want to tell our listeners again, thank you for tuning in to the Backyard Labrish, and to ask you to go by our website and leave us a little comment or build a profile and interact with some of the other backyard people. And there you can tell us your story and, you know, do lots of neat things. So we hope you'll be back again next week and join us in the labyrinth. Okay, good night.
Okay.
We're signing off now. And thanks again for representing Leigh.
You're welcome.
All right. See you next
time,
week.
Same place. Okay. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Donna. And Margaret signing off.